Hello, and welcome to Endeavors. On today's show, I speak with filmmakers William Eubank and Christian Sesma. That's coming up on Endeavors. Well, hi there. Happy Tuesday, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. It's been a minute since I've seen you all. I have successfully completed the first 4 weeks of my teaching stint here in Slovakia. I've been all over. First, I was in a town called Levice, then I went to Žilina, then Veliki Meder, then Kláštor pod Zvenom. I am currently coming to you from a town in the far east of Slovakia called Trebušov. And I'm sort of about an hour from the Hungarian border and an hour from the Ukrainian border. So that has been where I've been the last 3.5 weeks or so. I have been very busy teaching kids about different Canadian terms, about homophones and homographs and homonyms, playing games like Taboo and Fruit Salad and Change Places If. We've been debating the existence of aliens, or in the case last week, we debated whether Valentine's Day was a good or bad holiday. All kinds of things. And, you know, the first couple of weeks was, you know, a bit of a slow burn. Let's say, you know, walking into a classroom of 11 and 12 year olds in Levice and not really having any idea what I'm doing. Same in Žilina, and then having to spend a week on my own in Veliki Meder, which, although is in Slovakia, is a Hungarian-speaking town. So that was interesting, but I think that was also where I sort of really, I guess, found myself as a teacher. Mainly because I was forced to last week in a little village of 1,800 people where students are giving you bear hugs and saying they will never forget you and, you know, wanting you to stay and saying you have really good energy. So it's definitely been a roller coaster of emotions. And, you know, I was talking with my dad yesterday about trying to do more of my side hustles, whether it's writing or podcasting or research. So it's been kind of slow getting back to that, but alas, here we are, and it's a really good show today. I have two different film directors. My first guest is a writer-director, and the director of a film called Lights Out, which is about a drifting ex-soldier who turns underground fighter with the help of a just-released ex-con. And it stars Frank Grillo, Mekhi Phifer, Omari Nolasco, Jamie King, Scott Adkins, and the great Dermot Mulroney. He is Christian Sesma. He also has been in charge of such projects as Pay Dirt, Section 8, every last one of them, and Take Back. As I mentioned, his new film is Lights Out, and it's in theaters as of February 16th. This is my conversation with Christian Sesma. Christian,
yeah, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, bro. How goes it?
Good, good. I apologize. I have a little bit of a sore throat, but I hope you can hear me.
Oh, it's all good.
It's cold over here in Slovakia where I am. So.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's real cold.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I am Canadian, so it's not like I can't handle the cold, you know. But
right. We can't. I'm in the desert. I'm in Palm Springs, California, Southern California, in the desert. So. It's 65 degrees Fahrenheit. And we're freezing. So,
yeah. No, there's. It was quite frosty on the way to work this morning. So, yeah. But let's talk about Lights Out. This is, I think, a film that will surprise a lot of people. How did this come into your lap?
I just had got done wrapping Section 8. With the writer Chad Law, that is a buddy, we have a bunch of projects together, and the producer had this other script from Chad Law, and he was like, dude, do you want to go back to back on it? Like, we just wrapped the hot, we were enjoying the holidays, and like, we're going to go right into it in January. Let's go shoot. We have a window that we can get Frank and Mekhi on for this cool little fight movie. And I was like, okay, read the script. I was like, okay, this is interesting. It felt like an old school Roadhouse Lionheart kind of thing. And I was like, all right. And then they brought together such an amazing ensemble. I said, you know, how could I say no? This could be really fun and really cool. And if pulled off correctly, which was, you know, my idea, was like, how do I make a kind of character driven current fight movie, you know, in LA? So, you know, everybody was on board with the same kind of style. And we just kind of hit the ground running fast.
Well, about that, because I think specifically with the action genre, tone can be difficult because there's, you know, there can be a tendency to kind of just, you know, make it all about shooting and kind of just go over the top. What was the challenge for you as director of, you know, trying to find that maybe more new, you know, a character drama with sort of action sequences?
Yeah, I was always afraid that I was getting, like, I really was trying to, like, as a director, your job is like, I'm the protector of the tone, you know, like your job, a good director will protect that tone with his life. You know, like, we can't go this way. We can't go that way. And, you know, I was always so, so careful because I feel like this is the kind of movie that could be cheesy so quickly and so easily. Like, you're just making a cheesy fight movie that everybody's like, oh God. So, you know, we really worked hard to make sure that the characters were as compelling as they could be. And, you know, you wanted to watch what was happening with them and that the fights were just supporting this story, you know? So, yeah, I just felt like we were constantly, we were constantly making sure that the tone was kept of this movie for sure. So it didn't go off rails.
You know, and I know you've written your own scripts before as well, but I'm curious, as a director, is there a different mindset or mentality when you are in control of somebody else's words?
Well, yeah. I mean, luckily, you know, especially with Chad, and Chad's such a great collaborator, and we worked well together, and we understand how each other works. And, you know, and any good writer will understand that once your baby is let go into the world, is like, once you like send over your script, it's kind of hands off after that, because it's really up to the director, and it becomes the director, the producer's job. or and the baby. So it's kind of like you have to like let go of the baby. So yeah, I mean, look, once I get this, I take that script and make it my own. So dialogue wise, this wise, scene wise, I'll add stuff, take stuff out, this, that, and the other. And it's no different than in editing. It's like in editing, you're leaving stuff on the cutting room floor. You're doing this. You're changing people's performances. You're switching things up that aren't in the script or weren't necessarily in the same thing. So scripts are a great blueprint, and it should be the strongest foundation for that. But it's definitely just the first part of the movie making process.
With a film like this, are you, because I actually think Frank Grillo is really, really funny, and I wish he would do more comedy. And same with Dermot, but are you a director that maybe says, okay, improvise this one? Is there a lot of that going on, especially in a film like this?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of improv and staying loose with everything. And a lot of times we'll go, okay, let's wipe this out. Let's just give me something totally different. And I'll improv a lot. So there's definitely some stuff of that for sure.
Let's talk about casting, because you've got, we mentioned Frank Grillo, Dermot Mulroney, Mekhi Phifer, Scott Atkins. How involved are you personally as a director in the casting process?
Pretty involved. Pretty involved. I mean, like the producer will start running names by and characters. This and what do you think of this person? What do you think of this person? I go, oh, that person would be great. Like when Mekhi came up, I was like, dude, yes, let's go. Like, let's. I'm a giant Mekhi fan. Like, do you think he'll do this? And so, yeah, pretty involved.
It feels like Frank Grillo is an actor that hasn't really been given an opportunity to be showcased as the lead. What is the best part about an actor like Frank?
Oh God, he's just such a real talent. Like not only just is he an actual physically talented fighter, which was like, a huge win when it came to this. I'm like, this is good, perfect for him. But he's a phenomenal actor, like a thespian. I mean, the guy can really perform. And so that kind of passion and energy he brings when it comes to, I think, all those projects, especially this one, it was really just we were always trying to elevate the material, and he was constantly pushing to elevate the material. And yeah, I think this is a really kind of tailor-made Frank movie. You get to be physical, but you also have, the drama in it for sure.
With so many action scenes, what is your relationship like with a stunt coordinator, especially on a film like this?
Tight. I mean, that's like the stunt coordinator, fight coordinator in these movies is like your DP. It's just tight as your cinematographer, and they're definitely in charge of making sure, talk about tone. That the fight scenes and everything in tonality is matching. It's the same, and when we approached this with the fight coordinator, Luke Fontaine, we were like, look, dude, I don't want to make to keep this grounded and gritty and backyard brawler style. It can't be a slick John Wick fight choreography. Like those are professional hitmen doing professional hitmen. This is like backyard brawlers. So we wanted to make this a much more, just a brawler movie. Like, when you watch Fight Club, the choreography wasn't anything crazy. It's just Fincher doing what Fincher does. It's amazing. But you're talking about the fights. The fights weren't anything to write home about, because it just was brawlers in an underground basement or whatever that was. So we wanted the same kind of ideas and make sure that we're keeping it really grounded and really dirty.
The Oscar nominations just came out, and there's always a debate this time of year about whether or not stunts should be included as a category. Where are you on that?
Oh yeah, it's way long overdue for that because it's such a cornerstone of filmmaking. It's just a giant cornerstone of anything else. It's so big, and not just that, but it's so dangerous. And the things that these talented, amazing athletes and performers are doing on camera is unbelievable.
Is it because you feel like there's still an Oscar bias against action films or these types of movies?
For sure, 100%. Yeah, absolutely, for sure. I mean, I remember when Return of the King got nominated for, and it won for Best Picture. Lord of the Rings, like, and I remember it won, and I was like, wow, this is crazy. You have Lord of the Rings, like a giant action fantasy adventure film. Peter Jackson at his peak. Winning an Oscar for this. So I remember when that got nominated, I was like, holy wow, that's crazy. Because it's usually not that way. It's usually not the most popular mainstream movies hitting it. It's usually a little bit more artsy, a little bit more this, a little bit more that. I don't know. But I think there is absolutely a bias when it comes to that, for sure. It's like a lowbrow.
If you read the credits, you'll notice that both Dermot and Scott are credited as executive producers. How did that come about? And does that change the working relationship with them at all, knowing that you're also directing the people who are financing the film?
But they weren't, so not every exec producer finances. I think a lot of them bring different things to the table. So not they don't finance the movies. So a lot of times actors will get credited as executive producers because they own a piece of the project. Because like they're coming on board to do an independent movie. They're doing it as like favors to people, this, that, and the other. So they'll always take some sort of percentage. They'll back end points. And then they'll get like a courtesy credit. And so a lot of times the EP credits are courtesy credits.
The vanity credits, we call them, right? Isn't that the
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Dermot's having a moment, kind of playing like these very sort of nuanced villains.
Yeah.
What do you like about because he but he's also got kind of such a warm face. Why does someone like him make such a good kind of shady character?
Well, he's just an amazing actor, right? So it's like, I mean, you can go from being like a great villain to like everybody's favorite rom-com. I mean, like when I have when I when we were doing Section 8 and when we were doing Lights Out, I mean, the majority of everybody out here that was fans was like, oh my God, that's from my best friend's wedding, or that's from whatever, So he was really famous for his like rom-coms. I mean, look, and even now, I mean, his big movie right now is the big rom-com out right now with Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney. He plays Sydney Sweeney's dad. I mean, it's a giant movie. He's doing really well with it. But I think a lot of times in this in the indie world, he's been playing really fun villains. I mean, he was a villain, and he was like the main villain in my last movie. And on this one, he plays, I always say he's not necessarily the villain. He's the opportunist. But yeah, he's just a phenomenal actor. He's been around forever. The guy's a legend, so he can do it all.
You shot these two movies back to back, so are you ready to take a break now, or are you going to go straight into the next
Oh, no,
one?
never. No breaks. Yeah.
There's a lot of, I think, really good moments in this film. Is there one or two scenes that really stick out for you as your favorite?
I like some of the war. I like the war flashbacks. I think really help give scope to the movie, and really helps support Duffy's trauma. So I think some of those are pretty heavy sometimes. I also like the little moments between like Erica Peoples and Duffy together, just kind of having just talking moments in the scene. And then, of course, I like the character. And then I love Scott Atkins and Frank Grillo's like 11th hour kind of. Connection and relationship, and how one brother comes in for another brother and gives his life for him, So I think it's the little moments of really well done drama help support, the bigger action pieces.
I think that speaks to this growing trend of the sort of the more humane action hero, if you will, like, the more nuanced action hero is supposed to, like, the Liam Neeson or the Vin Diesel, which are great films, but I think they might lack a certain dimension. As
Yeah.
someone who's made a few of these films, is there a certain reason you can speak to about why we think why that's having its moment right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's maybe having a resurgence because, I mean, look, I grew up, like I talk about this in interviews all the time, grew up in the 80s, been just a giant fan of any 80s movie, 80 flicks. I think it helped forge kind of my cinema knowledge and kind of my taste or whatever. But I mean, look, Die Hard is probably the penultimate perfect action movie, right? And that was also the first time you had like an everyday man being the lead action star. I mean, John McClane and Bruce Willis, who was a comedian, like just coming off of Moonlighting, he was, to him to be an action star was unheard of, and he really became the guy, So I think relatable everyday heroes are are like, I think they never go out of style, really. I think it's just kind of having resurgences here and there, but yeah, for sure.
This movie is quite gritty, and I'm curious in terms of working with your cinematography, is a lot of sort of that look shot in camera, or do you do a lot of that in post?
Both. Yeah, definitely both, but definitely that's the style that we set from the beginning.
How early on in the process do you say like this is what it's going to be, and how much of that do you find either as you're shooting or in the editing room?
I mean, editing, I think you're able to really puzzle piece different ways of how it comes across, but I think as you're approaching the movie, and especially for me, especially with this kind of movie, it was very, very, very careful of to not go off rails on the tone. It was pre-planned pretty early on of what the movie will be, what it's going to look like, how we're going to shoot it, how we're going to approach it. I think character-wise and story-wise, there was points that we were exploring, but when it came to what the movie was and is and what it should be at the end of the day, it was very pre-planned for sure.
I think one thing that surprised me about this film was the score, because when you look at an action film, you don't necessarily think of the music, but I think just the style of this film, music plays a very key role. How did you go about working with your composers and finding sort of that added layer?
Well, I always wanted, like, I was always laughed because, like, the when I turn in my cut, when we put music to the movie, there's always, a lot of times you can't use the stuff that we're scoring to when it comes to like music, like when it comes to like soundtracks, So I always wanted to make sure that we were juxtapose like a hard hitting hip hop rap LA soundtrack with a much more kind of contemporary score from the composer, right? So I thought the composer did a great job. And then it's also juxtaposed with some really great hip hop tracks. So I think just making sure that we're finding that, again, tone to keep within the what the world that we're building here is crucial for sure.
Well, the film is Lights Out, and I do believe it is being released on the 12th of February.
February 16th. Friday,
February
February.
16th. My apologies. I encourage all of the listeners to go out and see this. I know I really, really enjoyed it. So, Christian, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Dan.
Cheers.
Cheers. Stay warm.
I'll try. And once again, that was my interview with director Christian Sesma. His new film, Lights Out, is out now. Well, we're sticking with action here, but in a different sort. In Land of Bad, an Army ODA team is ambushed. And their only hope lies with an Air Force man and a drone pilot to guide them through a brutal 48-hour battle for survival. It stars Liam Hemsworth along with his brother Luke, as well as Milo Ventimiglia, Ricky Whittle, and an up-and-coming Aussie actor named Russell Crowe. The writer director is William Eubank, and I had a chance to speak with him about the film not too long ago. Here is me and William Eubank.
How's it going, Dan?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Not too bad, not too bad.
So you have this new film out, Land of Bad. What made you want to write and tell a military story?
It was just a very, we wrote this when we wrote The Signal. So it was a million years ago. And The Signal was such a kind of quirky, crazy film that I remember, like, we had shot the scene with Robert Longstreet in The Signal, and it was so crazy and weird. I was like worried at the time. I was like, oh my God, I'm never gonna work in the film business again. It's too crazy. And so you're always afraid of that as a filmmaker. So my writing partner David Ferjeri, who also produced on this, we had kind of drone warfare was a new thing back then. It was like in a different realm even back then, not like now it's turning into a whole nother thing. But we just thought, wow, man, there's so many weird stories that could be told where you're telling this relationship story between, one guy in one place and another guy in another place, and how much can you really do? And yeah, the more we thought about it, we were like, God, it's almost like a video game where you're like, you got this one guy who like loses his weapons and loses his stuff, or he only has limited resources, and the only thing he has is the guy's, the eyes in the sky. And then we kind of shelved it because right when we finished writing it, like a bunch of drone movies came out at the time. I think there was Good Kill with Ethan Hawke and a few other ones that were made. And so we were just kind of like, ah, I guess it's kind of been done. And then as time went on, we shifted the film and we actually got back into it and rewrote it and realized, like, that should just more so be the world and the backdrop. It doesn't necessarily need to be the story. And that's where we really shifted and realized, like, especially as we started working with real drone operators and real Jake Tacks out at Fort Irwin, we were like, well, this is not even really what we expected. And we reshaped the story and sort of went to a new place with it.
You open the film with that statement about the Sulu Sea. What was it about that specific part of the world? It's like I'm gonna set it here, as opposed to, like Vietnam or Japan or anything like that.
Yeah. So I know a lot of like military people at this point, and it's like, there's just so many things that are happening in the world at all times that you're like, what the heck? I had no idea. And then you find out 20 years later, there was a lot of stuff that we were getting into where we were like, holy moly. Like, yeah, we just, in the end, we had sort of found out that there was a lot of things going on with different crazy sort of organizations and different this and that. And we just thought, once we sort of figured out there was a theater to a certain degree to sort of put this story into, and then also with all the sort of like modern day imperialism that's going on with, like other big nations will build dams and do crazy things in other smaller places. It just builds like a ripe setting for a crazy story. And on top of that all, we've seen so many stories, obviously, that are out in the sand. That it was really enticing to try to go back more towards like a 90s story in the jungle and get towards the wet, crazy blues and stuff like that.
You mentioned The Signal, and I know that after The Signal, you directed a couple other projects that you didn't write, and you also wrote this one. I'm curious if there's a different mentality going into it, knowing that you are directing your own words as opposed to somebody else's.
It's weird, though. I would say the big thing on this one is like, yeah, I wrote it so long ago that you kind of just see it's fun. It's fun to see like what your younger self was thinking, and but it's not always how you are now, then you see the world a little differently, and I would definitely say like it definitely when you're getting into the story and you're getting into the themes and this movie deals a little bit with loss of innocence and gets into like a little bit of a exploration of like types of violence, and de-evolution of violence. Like, I don't know, it's very interesting just being older, revisiting some of these things that you were thinking of when you were younger and then how they evolve. So, at the end of the day, yeah, I guess you maybe are more when you've understood something because you wrote it, like you're more passionate about how something should be portrayed or done or something like that. When I'm working for someone else, like a studio, and it's their words, you're just trying to execute the best job you can in how you understand it. But it's not, you don't, it's kind of freeing when you're not directing what you wrote because you don't have to fight as hard specifically. Like, whereas when you write it, you're so like, guys, this is what I wrote. This is what we're doing. So I like doing both. I really do. It's just a very different beast, you know?
How did you get Russell Crowe aboard?
You know, I'd written something else a long time ago called Worldbreaker, which hopefully I'll still make that movie. What happened was Underwater suddenly came up, and Russell and I had been talking for a while about this project, Worldbreaker, which is like a fantasy movie, and about this old like crazy warlord who, is like it's kind of like Unforgiven, and so. Yeah, I'd gotten close to Russell through that, and it was fun. It was like back in the, that was when he was doing press for the Nice Guys, which was just such an awesome movie. And yeah, we got to know each other through that, and unfortunately, certain things happened, and that movie fell through. But I kept a relationship with him, and when this movie came up, I just reached out to him, and he said, he's kind of busy, but he'll give it a read, and if he's into it, he'll let me know. And yeah, he hit me the next day and was like, "Wow, this is pretty cool. I like the themes it explores, and you guys can pull it together. Let's do it." So very fortunate because as soon as he came on board, then we started, we could go cast the rest of it and get the movie made. So.
You mentioned the Nice Guys, and I think that's when people realize that Russell's actually quite funny.
He's so funny. Yeah.
In a movie like this that has kind of, those zingers thrown in here and there dialogue wise, how much room did you leave for improvisation?
Yeah, tons, tons. And Russell really is funny. Like even little things where he's on the phone with his wife who's trying to give him the shopping list, and he's like, "Oh, you." He's like, "Well, why don't you call? Oh, you called Judy?" It's like that's his genius. It really is. And one of my favorite lines in the movie is when he's like explaining that they have, his to his vegan wife that they have real Mexican food. And then he stops and he's like, "Okay, I shouldn't have said the word real." That's all Russell. He's so funny. And he's such a joy to work with for those reasons. He really is a Renaissance man. I mean, he really has so much knowledge about theater and art and like everything from comedy to riding horses but you can see it's not because he like wants to be a know-it-all. It's because he's so passionate about all forms of art and expression, and it's just such a joy to work with somebody like that because they really elevate everyone else, and they're just, being with him on set is he's so spirited, and he would literally we'd do a take and he'd be like, "Will," I'd be like, "Dude, that was amazing." I was like, "I think we can move on." And he'd be like, "Will," he wouldn't even turn around, he'd just hold up his fingers, he'd be like, "Please, please, two more takes, and I promise it'll be 15% better." It's just awesome, like he never wants to stop, he just loves doing it, so.
As a director, you are in charge of the set, but when you're working with somebody like that, how much do you have to not acquiesce but their to their demands, but how much do you have to let trust their process as well?
Look, it's always a learning experience. Like I've been so fortunate movies in my movies working with people like Kristen Stewart and Lawrence Fishburne. And, you know, you're always like these, you know, everyone's got their methodologies and the way they work. And I think it's just for me specifically, what I have found works for me is just work super hard and just give it your all. And usually other people will notice that you're, and, but also showing respect, obviously. So it's just a process of working hard, offering mutual respect. And I think for me, it's worked really well. Like I always, I've never really had any issues with other people. Cause I think they go, oh man, he's killing himself. So I know he's trying to do something great. So let's just, let's figure it out. You know, that's all it is I'm sure, you know, bigger people, bigger egos, it can turn into crazy things, but, you know, not for me. I just try to keep the head down, put in the work. And I think other people like, you know, show the mutual respect back. So.
I mean, there have been military movies around since as long as there's been movies. Why do you think we are still fascinated by this type of story, and how do you think it's evolved over the years?
Yeah. What's interesting about this film particularly, or at this time, I guess this time particularly, a lot of crazy things going on in the world, which as filmmakers, we just try to make entertaining things. And unfortunately, sometimes, depending on what's happening in the world, your story could come at this moment or that moment. And, you know, you know, that's just the way the world is, you know. And like, for me personally, I'm just, military stories, like science fiction or like horror, they provide a unique stage for crazy things to happen. And maybe because military stories, because so many things are always happening, they're not, you know, people can immediately say, they can identify with it a little bit because they're like, well, that could happen, or it is happening, or maybe there's a lot of things actually happening in the Philippines that we don't know about, or, you know, it's something people can put their imaginations to. And then through that, start to, like, you know, connect with the characters. So it's just a big stage to play on, you know.
What makes a good military movie?
Well, like any movie, just characters that you can get into or trust or enjoy or feel something for, you know. That's to me the core of it, because things can get politicized and, you know, things like that can happen. It's very, especially, you know, in a time when things are very polarizing, it's very easy for people to lose sight of the heart or the soul of something, you know. And it's why in military movies now, you often see, even in the biggest military movies, like Top Gun or something, they try to make the bad guys as faceless as possible so that things don't get too politicized, you know? So it's a little tricky.
You know, speaking of politics, is film one of those things where you think it brings people together?
Also a tricky question. You know, as filmmakers, we're always just trying to entertain. That's the goal. But, you know, depending on what minds or eyes are watching something, or and because social media is so, unfortunately, like the, you know, back in the day, crazy things were like in society, you're like, well, this guy's crazy, better isolate him and not let him say too much crazy shit. Which, you know, now it's like, I forgot what it was, but there was like some crazy like thing where their kids were drinking like the milkshake from McDonald's and like, you know, doing crazy stuff on TikTok and like throwing it up and whatever it was so nuts. And back in the day, you'd be like, this guy's loony, you know. But now, like, that kind of stuff rises to the top of social media. So unfortunately, the rotten cream can often go straight to the top just because it's so polarizing. And so, with anything, as filmmakers, we just seek to entertain, tell a good story, hopefully have some heart and some soul in it. But you never know how things are received, and that's just part of the process.
Was there a favorite moment that you had on set, whether it was, how during filming or how the scene turned out or something, where you just went, "Oh, I didn't expect that."
Ricky, or sorry, no, I would say Ricky had some great moments, but no, Milo Ventimiglia flipping over that table backwards, in the soccer room fight scene. Did not expect him to do that, and he did such an awesome job. I was like, oh my God. And we shot that whole scene in like half a day, so it was like, just such a blast to shoot, and it kind of like blew me away that we were able to get it that quickly and that well, just given the constraints. Normally you'd want to spend like 4 days on a scene like that. But we literally shot the drone shots out that room that morning, went in, shot the two fights in literally like 6 hours. And I was just like, wow, okay, we're gonna make it.
Well, the film is Land of Bad, and it is in theaters on February the 16th.
Yeah.
William Eubank, thanks so much for your time today.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
All righty, you take care.
Cheers.
And that was director William Eubank. His new film, Land of Bad, is available in theaters and on demand now. My thanks to William Eubank and also to Christian Sesmer. Please check out his film, Lights Out, which is also in theaters now. That does it for me today. I will see you next time. Goodbye for now.